It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. What a pleasure to connect with author Catherine May about mystical moments in life's journey as we discover how to be in awe of what's above us and around us and allow ourselves space to try new things. Call in now with your questions and how you feel enchanted. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Catherine May is a podcaster, journalist, and author. Her book is called Enchantment, Awakening Wonder in an Anxious Age. Catherine, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's lovely to talk to you.
Well, take us inside enchantment and how you define it. What is it to you?
So I suppose it's important to talk about where enchantment comes from in the first place, in a way, because for me, it's about this quest to get back to a sense of self that I had when I was younger and a way to fight off those feelings that have come from like so many years of lockdowns and anxiety and conflict between different political factions, like all the stuff we've been going through. And I really wanted to find a way to re-engage and connect with the world around me, to have ways of soothing myself and maybe even to make a spiritual connection, but certainly to feel kind of integrated with nature again. And that for me is enchantment. It's that feeling of deep immersion and pleasure and comfort that we can take from immersing in a landscape.
Do you know when you feel it, where when it's there? How can we prime ourselves to be able to be aware of it when it's around us?
Well, I think it's something we have to learn, actually. I mean, I think a lot of us give up on it very quickly because it doesn't come immediately. And it is a skill, it's a muscle. And for me, it's about tuning into intuition again, you know, like being able to move towards the things that we're fascinated by, the things that make us feel awe or wonder, and to just notice those feelings in the first place. And once you start to train yourself to sink into your attention when you're outdoors, or perhaps even, you know, when you're on your phone and you're looking for something to rest your attention on, you begin to notice this feeling, which is this pull, and it's this pull towards it. And it's a pull towards a space where all of you is welcome and not just the best bits. So it's almost like you're looking for a place where you can take your feelings in that moment and reflect on them or experience sights, sounds, whatever it is that puts those feelings into context and makes you feel like you're part of this wider world again. I think it's a feeling that we would all recognize from childhood, you know, from those times when we really like couldn't put down a stone that we were holding in our hand, you know, or when we found like a flower really fascinating, even if the adults around us were like, oh, that's just a weed, you know. We know that feeling. But I think a lot of us think we can't have it once we're grown up.
You know, you use the word lockdown, which in a way, it's almost become like this trigger word for COVID. And, you know, you started writing this book during the pandemic when everyone was confined to their homes. How did those circumstances affect the focus of what you were writing about and how you went about writing?
Oh, my goodness. Well, they made it really urgent for me to write this book, I think. I mean, I found myself after a few months of COVID and lockdowns and all of the panic surrounding it and the worry, I found myself in this space where I felt like I was grinding to a halt. I felt like I couldn't access my brain anymore. Like everything was so foggy and time was behaving in a really strange way. And I was behaving in a way that I didn't recognize, you know, like even when I was allowed to go out, I didn't feel like I could. I felt like there was this kind of barrier in place as if I'd learnt the lockdown rules too well and I couldn't break out of them again. And I kind of had to write my way out of that. Like I wanted to understand what that was, because it struck me that in some ways, this wasn't just about the pandemic, you know, that this was actually responding to a sense of exhaustion that I'd been feeling for years that had built up and built up. And, you know, like we've started talking about burnout a lot recently. And I think we really needed that conversation, because I think that sense of burnout has come to loads of us from this continuous experience of worry and anxiety and fear that we can't ever play out by action, you know. It's just kind of always behind us. And so that for me, I mean, I always write to try and explore, to understand, you know. I don't ever write from a point of knowledge, I write from a point of learning. And it seemed to me that I needed to write about this in order to work out what was happening and how to confront it, really.
Catherine May with us, her new book, Enchantment, Awakening Wonder in an Anxious Age. You can join in the conversation along the way at 800-642-1234. Catherine, you organize the book, you know, with these four elements of the universe: earth, water, fire, air. And starting with earth, you write about personally feeling that disconnection, you know, being discombobulated in a world of all this change and chatter. Why do you think people feel that disconnect? And what does that mean for us, for our ability to focus on small things, little things and tasks in our life?
I think there are so many elements, and I love that word discombobulation. It's almost onomatopoeic, isn't it? This feeling that everything is disconnected, like your limbs are flying away from you somehow. And I do think this is related very strongly to the body, actually, and to our lack of metaphorical and physical groundedness, our feeling that we're living in our heads and that we're not existing in our bodies. Our bodies feel very far away from us. That's a really challenging question for me, because I am definitely a person that loves to live in my head traditionally. Like I'm really happy thinking about things and daydreaming and reading books. But in order to engage with the small and with the local, you know, like a lot of my book is about how you can find wonder in places where you think, you know, wonder didn't exist, where you think we're just too ordinary to find wonder. Part of that is being able to engage with the small and with the unnoticeable. And to do that, you have to be in your body and not in your head. Because when you're living in your head, when you're living in your thoughts, you're constantly thinking about the past or the future, but you're not really in the present. It really disrupts your ability to do that noticing and to anchor yourself in the here and now. And therefore to notice what is actually going on with you in that moment and not in these kind of projected places that we're roaming about in that aren't actually connected to us right now. So, yeah, that first part of the book where I'm talking about earth, I'm thinking about groundedness and how that relates to connecting to the body and to kind of getting back into those physical sensations which actually take us right into our experience, right into the heart of it.
We're exploring life moments with author Catherine May. The book is Enchantment. Call in about what comes up, thinking about wonder and awe, questions you have for this author, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We learn how to notice the world around us in new ways, and how author and podcaster Catherine May finds sacred moments that help bring relief to anxious times. Call in with questions for Catherine and thoughts on uses of all the senses. The number to call with your question is 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. And the book is called Enchantment. Catherine, can you take us into the concept of hierophany and describing your grandmother sitting and eating an orange in the sunlight in the afternoons? And such a vivid memory, that childhood memory for you. How does that connect with the concept of hierophany?
So hierophany is this really beautiful term coined by Mercia Eliard, which explains the way that the sacred features in the mundane. So it's the way that certain objects or places represent the sacred for us you know, in our houses, in our churches, in our wild spaces. It might be a rock, it might be an altar, it might be all of the things in between. And I wrote about hierophany in Enchantment when I talked about one of my favourite memories to return to, you know, those lovely ones that you can visit again. And that is my grandmother, who used to sit down every afternoon after lunch in her very quiet house. And she would lay out a piece of kitchen paper on her lap and peel an orange. And it was such a beautiful point in every day, because for my grandmother, the orange was a really special thing. It was a treat, you know, and I maybe don't value oranges quite as much myself. They seem very ordinary to me, but for her, it was this pause in the day. And she'd spend ages kind of massaging the orange and peeling off the skin and then peeling off all the little silks of a pith. And sometimes she would offer me a bit, but most of the time she didn't. It was her indulgence. And I don't know if it was a hierophany for her, but it certainly was for me. It was this feeling that the room became almost prayerful when she was doing that, that this sense of peace just drifted down onto us, and I now have it as a kind of touchstone that I can visit when I want to capture that feeling of deep comfort and contentment and safety. Actually, it's a hierophany for me.
It's so interesting. It brings you back every time, even if you smell an orange. I think you mentioned being on a plane and someone starting to peel an orange, and there you are. You're taken back to that memory.
Yeah, it lets me, it pulls me in, really. And I often peel an orange now when I'm travel sick, which I think is probably what the person on the plane was doing. I'm not really sure if oranges work for travel sickness, but they it brings me a sense of calm, you know. And so I'll often be found with an orange in my bag, because it's a really good way of coping.
Well, let's move on to another thing that pulls us in, which is water. In the water section, you talk about swimming in the North Sea near your home in Whitstable, England. And when the wind is high and the waves, you know, they just really buffet you and you're at the mercy of the sea. How difficult and humbling is it to connect with the elements at like moments like that?
Oh, yes, it really is. But I'm always incredibly drawn towards water, and I have been since I was a tiny, tiny dot. Like, I was always that child that had parents chasing after them to pull them away from the sea that they were just kind of zombieing towards. And I'm still a little bit like it now. But I find my sense of calm in the sea, without a doubt. And I find that it clears my mind when I'm swimming in the sea. But the more I swim in the sea, the more I've had to acknowledge that there are points that are, you know, quite hard to discern when it tips over into being dangerous. And I actually love being in the sea when the waves are high, for as long as it's safe. But there have been some moments when it hasn't been. And there's a really important connection there for me, I think, with that sense of danger and with that feeling that the sea is so big and so powerful and so much more potent than I could ever get on top of. And that sense of being humbled by it, that sense of being too small to combat it, if you like, and of therefore having to engage with what I can do and what I can't do and to find my own limits, is like a really useful meditative practice for me. You know, spending time by the sea before I swim and really thinking about whether the sea is too big for me today, you know, whether, you know, I'm enough for it in that particular moment, as opposed to just blindly getting in and assuming it's okay. And it's strange to me to say this, because actually I find it very comforting to engage with that sense of risk, to truly do it, rather than to not engage with it and to just get in the sea and worry about it later. I actually find it helpful to sometimes decide not to swim now instead of to just swim, because that for me is a way of sort of engaging with what the sea is, what the sea is bringing to me in that moment, and not in general, or not how the sea would behave if I wanted it to be how I, you know, ready for me at all times. There's something about that. It's quite hard to put into words, but it's a feeling rather than a concept. You know, it's this sense of powerfulness and potency and wildness that is a really immense thing to feel in your body, standing next to that huge mass of water as it seethes away in front of you.
I think you're right. The tides are gravity made visible. And you like to visit the shoreline when the tide is out. Can you talk about the tide and what that means with you and you know, when the tide is in or out?
Yeah, I only really learned to conceptualize the tides when I was writing Enchantment. Like I understood that it was about the pull of the moon, but I didn't understand it in depth.
Mm-hmm.
And what I came to realize was that the moon is pulling a high tide out towards it as it travels around the Earth, which means that there's one big continuous wave constantly traveling around. You can conceptualize it like that. So when the tide goes out, it's not moving away for you. It's just that the wave has carried on moving in the opposite direction and there's no pull left on it. And that for me really flipped something over in my head, you know. Like that's not how I thought this was working. And I live in a fishing town, a Victorian fishing town, and when the tide's out I can go and stand by the harbour, and because there's a wall there with a green line that marks where the high tide is, you get a real sense of just how much water floods in and out of our town every day. And it seems like nothing, you know, when the tide's in. It seems like it's always been there, but it's only when the tide's out that you realise what an immense volume of water had to travel towards us in order to bring that tide up to us and to make it deep enough to swim. And I can stand on the beach by the harbour, and I can see how far above my head that water would have gone if I was standing on the ground. And, you know, that's not just at one point, that's all the way along our coastline. And it really puts the whole of me into perspective to understand how big that is, and to again, to physically feel it. It's a feeling, it cannot be put into words in a way that adequately captures it, but to immerse myself in that sense of being engulfed almost. Do you know what? It's a relief, because I often feel like I have to take responsibility for everything, and it makes me realise how tiny I am and how I can't possibly be expected to do that when the sea is so big.
That's beautiful. Catherine May with us. The book is called Enchantment, Awakening Wonder in an Anxious Age. And you can join in along with the conversation at 800-642-1234. Catherine, you're really honest about taking swimming lessons as an adult and wanting to authentically know how to do those strokes and go back and forth and, you know, indoors. How, you know, what was that experience like for you in really trying to learn strokes, swimming strokes?
Yeah, because I never learned to swim properly, if you like, when I was a child. You know, I learned to swim by my mum standing in a pool and I'd gradually doggy paddle towards her, and then she'd take a few steps back and hope I wouldn't notice. You know, like that's how I learned to swim. And I got to a point with my sea swimming when I no longer had that faith that it was enough, you know, that if I got into a situation that I felt was dangerous, you know, where I felt out of control, I didn't have the faith that I had enough kick in my stroke to get out of it. And so I decided that I would learn to swim properly instead of just my made up version of swimming. But I was always really fascinated to see people doing front crawl, because I've never been able to do a good front crawl. And it always felt like a really exhausting stroke to me. And I wanted to do that thing that other people were doing that looked really cool. So yeah, I joined a swimming class in my local public baths. And it was so much harder than I could ever have imagined, because I was further back. Like if I'd never swum before, it would have been easier because I'd have been learning it from scratch. But instead, what I had to do first of all was to unlearn everything I thought I knew about swimming. And that took weeks to unravel. Like my body kept kind of trying to get back into its old habits. And there was a point when I felt like I couldn't swim at all. But then gradually this new rhythm came in and this new bodily knowledge kind of just dropped in, really. And I began to be able to do this magic front crawl. And that was exactly the moment when we got locked down and the swimming pools were closed for the next 6 months.
And you haven't looked back since.
I haven't. You know what? I was in a swimming pool this weekend and I really, you know, I remarked on how easily I fall into that front crawl now. I still won't be winning any races, but my body's definitely learned how to do it now. And it feels really good.
Catherine May, author of Enchantment, Awakening Wonder in an Anxious Age. Colin, about interacting with the world, what you notice. Bring questions, comments to the conversation at any point. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Author Catherine May is here as we explore how to set aside the urgency of life to find meaning in smaller moments and to feel what's around us in new ways. There's room for you in this conversation as you find enchantment and meaning, how you savor things. Call in with questions and thoughts, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Catherine May's latest book is called Enchantment. Catherine, let's focus on fire, on the fire section. And you take us to consider how meteor showers have really alarmed people and fascinated people throughout, you know, existence for centuries. How has your understanding of meteor showers changed?
Actually, do you know what? I think the question to ask is how our understanding of things yes. changed, because it's so recent that we actually knew what that was. I mean, I grew up knowing for sure that a meteor was a rock falling from space, and that's never been a question in my mind. But I write about the instance in 1833 of a huge meteor shower happening, and people did not know what they were. Like, even the scientific community had theories, but they really thought they were more similar to the Northern Lights than to anything actually falling from space. And there's this beautiful account of that night when people woke up in the night to see so many meteors in the sky, like 10,000 a minute, which I find very hard to picture, that they described the bowl of, above our head. You know, you could see the shape of the Earth reflected in the sky. Mm. And people's reaction to that was incredible. You know, there was this sense that they perceived themselves being on a rock hurtling through space. You know, the perspective radically shifted. And with that, so many other things shifted too. You know, people made big decisions about their life in that moment because they perceived what they were in the huge context of the galaxy. And I, when I first read about that, I mean, I think that was the seeds from which this book was sown, because I, that shift, that moment of understanding what we are and the way that meaning effortlessly flows from that, is really at the core of what I wrote about in Enchantment.
And going to see a meteor shower and either being awestruck or being let down when it doesn't appear the way, you know, I think you use the words like the meteor showers are on the cusp of mundane and rare, which when you think about those words, yeah. we really don't allow that into our lives, mundane and rare.
No, I mean, I, you know what? I did not realize that there are 13 meteor showers a year and they happen as regular as clockwork. Like, we know what dates they come on. There's nothing even remarkable about having a meteor shower within a few weeks of, you know, of wherever you're standing right now. And I wonder how many of us have actually seen a meteor shower, you know, and maybe I bet you, I mean, I could draw the sort of pie chart of who might call in if I asked that question, because there will be a small sliver of people who are really into astronomy who most certainly have seen a meteor shower. And then there'll be another maybe quarter of people who've happened to see some meteors, one or two. But I bet you that the majority of us have not sat up at night to witness this amazing thing. And to be fair on all of us, it's not that straightforward. You have to have a clear night, you know, and you have to sit up really late so there's no light left. And as I found out in Enchantment, if there's a full moon, all bets are off because the light is so bright from the moon that you can't see anything else. Even so, if I say to somebody I've seen a meteor shower, they'll go, oh, wow, that's amazing. And yet, but probably won't make the effort to go and see it. And it's a question for us to all think about. You know? These amazing things are there for us to witness, but we ultimately choose not to make the effort to witness them most of the time. And I wonder why. I mean, I wonder what leads us into that willful ignorance, if you like, because those moments can be life-changing. They open up so much space to think in and to understand in, and yet they're never quite important enough now for us to do it.
It just, they seem to get buried because you think, well, you can't stay up late. There's work in the morning, or, you know, yeah, the kids have this place to go. They can't stay up late, or just making space for something that you don't do normally or have never done before. That takes true intention.
Mm, it really does. And life is so busy. We are so busy all the time, and everything seems more important than going chasing after something as fragile as a meteor shower. And yet, I think if you think about the full scope of your life, you'll have wanted to have seen a meteor shower by the time this is all over. It was available all along.
Catherine May with us. The new book is Enchantment, Awakening Wonder in an Anxious Age. The number to call in is 800-642-1234. Catherine, there are moths in your book. You write beautifully about the similarities between many of us and the moths you find bumping into windows of your home. And, you know, you say we feel small, frustrated, and capable of only tickling a world we wish would feel our heft. How else are we like moths?
Well, we are very lost little souls like moths, I think, and we're endlessly attracted towards flames. You know, we fly hard towards the things that can harm us the most because it shines so brightly and it makes such a big, you know, noise for us, if you like. But also there's that sense that we're fragile like moths, you know, and that we're vulnerable to the changes that are happening in the world, and that like moths, our habitats are being destroyed, and the foundations on which our fragile lives are built are being seriously undermined and shaken. And I find it helpful to think about how fragile I am too. I'm not as solid as I like to believe. And I am, I think, part moth, really.
I was so fascinated by the Dungeness ears, where, you know, one of the sacred places you take us to, Dungeness, England, these large concrete ears. And I'm wondering if you could explain what they are and what you found there.
Yeah, I love that we call them ears as well. That's just a lovely organic metaphor, isn't it? Because they're actually made of concrete, you know. They are early sonar technology. So Dungeness is a little peninsula at the very bottom of England in the southeast near where I live. And of course, just across the channel is France. And before we fully invented electronic sonar technology, we invented these incredible bowls, vertical bowls made of concrete that stand facing the sea, and they capture sound waves. And so the idea was that if a plane was flying across the channel, you'd be able to hear it in these big ears sooner than you can see it. And so that was always the plan, particularly on, like, say, a foggy day or a day when it was, you know, when visibility wasn't very good. The only problem was that they really were so primitive that it only gave you a couple of minutes grace and probably not enough time to scramble a plane to go and fly out after them. But there we go. We're in the first third of the 20th century, and that's as much as we have. And nearly as soon as they were invented, they were superseded, but they're still there. And they're actually, you know, they're not a tourist attraction. Most people don't know they're there. And I've walked up to see them a few times in my life, and I find them a really magical place, because I learned about sound waves at school in physics, and it always felt very theoretical to me until I met those ears and realized that no, there really was this wave of sound that could be caught in a bowl. And you can hear it. And if you the sort of I don't know, the little bit of metal is still attached to them that you can press your ear up against, and you can hear a different soundscape coming across to you. And I think I say in the book that the air is full of information, you know, but we just don't always know how to tune into it. And I love the idea of there being this invisible content to this that we can't perceive, but we can perceive because we're hearing things, but we can't perceive the way in which it's working. And I wanted to use that to really think about how science and magic begin to close to a full circle once you start to really engage with these concepts that are not in any way abstract, but feel very, very hard to really believe in until you can witness them. And my sound ears, for me, help me to witness that theoretical science that I learned at school.
Your blog had a picture of them, which also helped put a picture in my mind's eye. But I mean, they're just kind of growing up. The landscape has grown up around them, even. And just like nature kind of wending its way around these concrete ears.
Well, I mean, Dungeness is a very wild space, and it's very hard to make it do anything it doesn't want to do, I think. But the ears are positioned next to small lakes, which helps the sound, so it helps to reflect the sound into them. And so they're just really beautiful. They're by these beautiful bodies of water. There are, you know, trees and plants growing all around them, and they've been absorbed back into the wild. But yeah, they're I don't know. There are so many. I think there are many parts of enchantment that are about things that I can't believe more people aren't visiting. You know, why are these things not famous? To me, they seem monumental in so many different ways. And, you know, we don't notice everything.
Let's bring on a call. Meg near Chippewa Falls. Meg, hi, go ahead.
Hello, good morning. It's such a delight to listen to you both. Morning.
Good morning, Meg. Thank you. Oh,
I
Meg.
just am calling. Go ahead.
Meg, you're just cracking up there. Go ahead. Hopefully we can hear you.
Oh, no. Well, I'm driving from Minneapolis to Milwaukee today. I hope I don't break up. I'm around Chippewa Falls and near Eau Claire. And I am listening to you both, and I just wanted to share my connection to what you're discussing and the lovely topics of the book Enchantment. Am I still coming through okay?
You are. What's on your mind?
So I experienced sexual abuse as a child, and I'm now in my late 30s and experiencing different ways of healing and therapies. And it wasn't until I was in my early 30s I learned about the idea of disassociation and how that's something that I do or had been doing as a way to cope with my experiences in the past. And I find that I connect to this idea of the best way to, I guess, to sort of be in your body and fight that coping method of disassociating from your body as a way to just detach from the trauma or the pain is to sort of find those wild, wonderful, awful moments. And by that I mean like moments full of awe and the places full of awe and the beauty in the world. Like peeling an orange, like watching someone peel an orange or smelling it. And those are the things I think that I find grounding. And I wonder, I shared, I called in, and I just think that now more than ever, I think we all need that as we deal with the global pandemic and COVID and just overcoming whatever challenge we face. And I think that it's wonderful what you're doing, and I am going to track down this book and share it with as many people as I can, because life is too short, and there is so much beauty in the small and the small moments and listening in those spaces. And I think that's hopefully what will remind us we're all human, you know? So,
Meg, thank you so much for deeply personal and sharing that. Appreciated. Catherine.
Oh, Meg, that's so beautiful and so generous of you to share that. Mm-hmm. And I love the way that what you express is about making being in your body feel safe again, you know, like going into these beautiful spaces and letting the physical sensations of like being in water or being in nature ground you again and recreate a place where your body feels like yours. And that's just an extraordinary way to think about it. Thank you.
Author Catherine May, as we explore how to walk through this life, behold the little magical moments in everyday things. Call in with questions, what you wonder about, what comes up for you. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Author Catherine May is here helping us find the sacred in everyday moments and realize there is enchantment wherever we are. Her book is called Enchantment, and the number to join in with questions is 800-642-1234. Catherine, let's take a moment here to have you do some reading. And there's this passage that you talk about having difficulty reading books like you used to. Can you set that up for us?
Yeah, I found that one of the symptoms of my dislocation in the pandemic was that I couldn't read. I lost my ability to read whole books. And this passage comes when I've made a little progress on it. I've done a little reflection. I've given up on books for now, or at least whole ones. I'm trying to find the play again in my reading, in poems and articles, stories and essays. I've reset my terrifying to be read pile to zero and allowed myself the possibility of choosing new books for this age I've landed in. I've also deleted a mass of apps from my phone, and I would like to claim that they were stealing my attention, but I know really that my attention willingly handed itself over. The ravages of this time have left me less and less keen to engage with the world in its full complexity. I've been shying away from thought itself. I've wanted to be distracted. A change is coming, whether or not I'm paying attention. Life is no longer the same. I can feel it in the people around me, the scramble to get away from it, the terror that it might touch us, the urge to stay high and dry. I can feel us calcifying, separating, drawing in. I hope the change brings justice rather than suffering, connection rather than rancour. I hope we can all rise above the urge for petty revenge. I hope, most of all, that we can learn to soften into this time and into each other, to merge again somehow, to melt back into the landscapes that hold us, and that are still releasing the wisdom of millennia, quietly, slowly, if only we can learn to listen. Mm. Change is the endless bedrock. Oh, would you like me to read further?
I just want to pause there because that passage just took my breath away. It just, and I'm wondering, as you go back to read it, what comes up for you?
Actually, I've realised that I haven't read this one aloud. It's interesting, you know. I choose the same bits again and again to read, and mm-hmm. I love it when somebody else chooses a passage for me, because I find all these hidden corners. And of course, the books to me in my head are continuous, whereas to take a passage and read it separates something out. And I, It's a really interesting point there, isn't it? Just that moment of realizing, which I think is in so much of my work, the moment of realizing not that change might come, but that it's already happened, you know, that change is this irresistible force. I write a lot about this in Wintering as well, you know, this sense that change is everything that we're made up of, and that we spend so much time and energy trying to resist change and trying to stop it from happening and trying to kind of game it somehow so that we come out the winner.
I just found it to be such a little prayer for this time. I found it just such a just a little prayer. That's all I can think of. I want to just fit in Catherine in River Falls now. Catherine, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Catherine with a K. This is Catherine with a C. I just have to say, I'm one of your biggest fans. I love your books in all of them. I just find this amazing. There are all these little nudges that nudge me out of the stresses of life, you know, and remind me that there's so much magic out there. I grew up in Torquay, and when you're writing about the coastal path, you know, I'm right there with you. I'm like you, I love the sea, and I'm in River Falls, Wisconsin, so I couldn't get further from the sea, even if I'd planned it. But just reading your books, they bring me joy, they bring me hope. And as I say, they give me these little nudges that there's so much out there if we just pay attention. So that it's just a fan call, Catherine.
I love it. Thank you. And I mean, you come from a very beautiful part of the world, of course, which I'm very, very fond of. But I, you know, one thing I'd say is those nudges are really me nudging myself, because I do exactly the same as everyone else. You know, I drift back into living in my head, and I forget to go out, and I forget to notice. And I write books to remind myself first and foremost that this must be done, that this work is so important.
And we kind of walk right alongside you, I think, as a reader, which is just so wonderful as well. And we get to take these little journeys with you. And it's just, it's been such a pleasure. Catherine, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you. That was such a gorgeous conversation. And I love the way you've shown me new angles of my own book.
Catherine May is a podcaster and journalist. Her most recent book is Enchantment, Awakening Wonder in an Anxious Age. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.